I'm Georgie Crawford. You're listening to the Good Glow podcast. Throughout my treatment for breast cancer, I've realised the importance of self-care. Whether it's a trip to the gym, a checkup with your GP, or even a 5-minute meditation, the time has come for us to put ourselves higher on our own to-do list. I'll speak to people who remind us to take better care of ourselves. And what better way to take care of ourselves than to understand more about our bodies? This series, I've teamed up with Fitbit. Fitbit allows you to get to know yourself better and understand your health with insights that are unique to you. As I always say, knowledge is power, and Fitbit provides data about your health and well-being to help empower and support you in leading a balanced and healthy lifestyle. I'm so happy to have Fitbit on board, as my Fitbit helps keep me focused and on track with my goals and training. Being partnered with Fitbit is inspiring, as they're encouraging everyone to make positive changes, and I hope this podcast does too. This week on the Good Glow podcast, I speak to Sarah Shannon. Sarah was a trained lawyer when she decided to leave the corporate world because it just wasn't for her anymore. She packed her bags and travelled the world. She's walked the Camino, met some fascinating people along the way, and she's here today to tell her amazing story. Sarah, thank you so much for joining me on the Good Glow this week.
Thank you, Georgie. I'm delighted to be on.
We were introduced by a mutual friend only at the start of this week, and something was just telling me that you were my next guest for the Good Glow, and I'm just so excited to hear your story. I've been reading a lot about your story this week and how you went from lawyer to yoga teacher, and you gave up that career to start on a brand new journey. And I want to know why you gave it all up. Where did that urge come from?
So the big decision was last year in August, when I actually left the career, left the job with no idea what I wanted to do next. So that was the big, I suppose, big change, big decision. But like, I suppose, anything in our lives, any big decision, there's always all that stuff in the background. The time it takes to get to that moment of taking that leap of faith. So that kind of began years before. And I suppose to give a kind of brief timeline, not going into huge detail of my 34 years on this earth, but I did business and law in college and took time off after to travel. And then I trained in Dublin in one of the law firms, and I was there for 6 years. And it was kind of towards the end of the sixth year, I got this urge to travel. And it was totally different than any other traveling desire. I wanted to go on my own. I wanted to go to parts of Asia I'd never been to. I was drawn by yoga and meditation. And I just booked a one-way flight to Bali, is where I was starting off.
And had yoga been a part of your life while you were practicing law?
Yeah, it had started probably when I was about 25, practicing kind of in the evening time, kind of not a huge amount at the beginning, and then it became a more regular practice.
And I know lots of people that have studied law, and it's really like you dedicate your life to it for so many years.
Oh, yeah, because it was... like, I was 7 years in law firms, but when you add on the college years, like, it was over 10 years of my life I pumped into law.
So you decided then this was it, you wanted to go travelling. And did you have a time frame in your mind, and did you have to go to your bosses and explain what you were doing?
Yeah, I kind of handed them my notice saying I'm going off travelling. People are so supportive, and you kind of think in law firms people wouldn't get it, but people do, you know, which is amazing. So people were supportive, and I was heading off for 3 months was the plan, coming back at Christmas. And Bali, I was set on Bali, and I may have been slightly guided by a little book called Eat, Pray, Love. So I don't know whether I was skipping the eating and the praying and going straight for love in Bali and Javier Bardem. But that was my first stop, and I didn't even have a plan, and I was doing it very much on a shoestring budget. You know, at age 32, I stayed in hostels for the full, I ended up going for 9 months and going to 9 different countries all around Southeast Asia. Stayed in hostels, dorm rooms all throughout. I had friends who came out and visited at different times. And, you know, sometimes we might stay in a little bit nicer places, but it was, yeah, it was kind of really like backpacking.
And what's that like?
Yeah, it's like hostels, eating street food, getting to know the locals. I loved island life. So in Malaysia and in the Philippines, I spent quite a bit of time on the islands where I'd do like, you know, beach yoga and watch the sunset every evening and just kind of have a bit of a lifestyle there, you know, get into a bit of a routine. And in those places when I was still, I really loved my yoga practice there. And this whole time was, when I look back, so important because I got into this good practice of writing in a journal all the time, mm-hmm. like every day. I think it was like one of my favorite things to do. After a day of activity, I'd go down to like a beach bar in one of the islands, like a reggae bar. I love reggae. And I'd take out my journal and order myself a beer. Love Asian beers also. Sing a beer. And I'd sit and write as the sun set. And I just would write and write and write.
And what would you write about?
I was getting to know myself at age 32. Before that, I had no clue, I don't think. At the back of my journal, I had this page titled Things That I Like. And I started writing down, you know, sunset. And things that I started noticing, like I noticed I love the smell of incense and reggae music. So I was writing these down, and they're not exactly groundbreaking stuff, but I'd never really taken the time to find that out about myself. If someone had asked me, what type of music are you into? I would have hated that question because I wouldn't have known. Or like, what's your favorite time of day? You know, and then now I can say reggae. Sunset. Yeah. So it was this big time of just getting to know myself.
It's so funny because when you said that, it just triggered a memory in my head. And when I shaved my head, I kept saying to Jamie, I want the Gypsy Kings, I want candles, I want red wine, I want lovely like carrots and hummus and lovely food. And I was talking to my husband, Jamie, last week, and he was saying, they're all the things that you love. They're all the things that you wanted there for that experience. And actually writing stuff like that down, you could go away then and have your me time. And I could light the candles, put on the Gypsy Kings. And only when you write these things down sometimes do you realise how much you love them. That's such a great tip. I love it.
Absolutely. And we kind of forget. And it's all there. But we probably sometimes know what either a boyfriend or a friend likes. But we don't actually know what we like ourselves. Mm. So this was kind of, yeah, getting to know all those bits.
And had you written down stuff before, or was it only now that you had the time to do it that you were doing that every day?
I'd started the journaling probably about 4 months before I went off on the trip. So I'd gotten into a bit of a rhythm with it. Mm. But it was really on the trip. When you're away from everything as well, and you have the time, and you can sit alone and write in a journal. Mm.
And did you feel lonely?
No, because I think of the journal.
Right.
Yeah. I think that was my savior of if I did feel lonely, if I felt confused, because I had mad experiences, like it was full on. So when I got myself into all sorts of pickles, writing in the journal, you know, I'd write whatever my issue was. By the end of the page, because I'm kind of an optimistic person, I'd always end with kind of, you know, but you did your best, or you tried, or, you know, it'll all work out. So it was kind of like a friend talking to me, but through my pen.
Amazing. You know. So the time came then for you to come home and go back to work. Did it?
Yeah, and like, because I'd had such a mad experience, I did things like a 10-day silent meditation in Malaysia, where I was silent for 10 days.
What was that like?
Meditating every day for 10 hours.
Wow.
Intense. Yeah. But I'm about to do it again in Ireland for 3 days. So obviously I got something out of it.
Yeah.
That I'm doing it again. And I'd spent a lot of time like learning about yoga and meditation. And I spent time in northern Thailand in Buddhist monasteries, like dressed in white, meditating every day and just kind of delving into all of that world. So they were the kind of things also I was writing at the back of the journal about what I was interested in.
And did you feel different in your within yourself during that time? Like, did you feel less stressed or healthier?
Yeah, I felt definitely less stressed. I felt free, very free to kind of be myself, which I was really discovering. And I suppose too, I felt I could really indulge in the things I really liked that I was finding out about myself.
Mm. Which we're often don't give ourselves any time to enjoy the things we love to do because we have these big, long to-do lists.
Absolutely. And you have to-do lists and you want to hang out with friends. So you do what everybody else likes to do, or you also, you don't get that much time on your own, I guess, when you're which is great because we want to be around people as well. But going off traveling on your own is definitely the best thing I've ever done. It was a catalyst to what happened afterwards.
Mm. Your family were obviously very happy to have you home.
Yes. My mum and dad, they just hear all the things I was doing over there and they were absolutely delighted. Coming home to the airport was fabulous with them waiting there.
So did you go back to work then?
Yeah, so I got home and I'd been a year without work. I'd been, living in hostels, as I said, living out of a backpack. So I was actually dying to kind of get into a routine.
Mm.
I had no money, so I was trying to like make some money and root down. I think I was very much up in the air because of the travel and I wanted to root down. So I wanted an office job. I was looking forward to going back to law, I think, to a certain extent. But I went into it with gusto. I got a job in one of the law firms in Dublin on the corporate team, and I went for it. I started, I worked hard on the transactions that we were working on. I started saving for a deposit for an apartment and just knuckled down, I guess, and kind of did the things I thought I was supposed to be doing.
And how long did that last for?
6 months.
6 months.
Well, 6 months I got that urge. I'd worked really hard on all the transactions. I hadn't gone away on holidays or anything. I'd been promoted to associate and I thought I'd take a trip away after Christmas to go to India. And I remember I actually didn't even want to go. It was after Christmas, hectic Christmas, late nights. And I remember I was packing to go to India. And it was, those few days after Christmas, and I was sitting around with my sisters and my sister's boyfriend. We just ordered Chinese, and I was in a onesie. we put on an old movie, and my sister's boyfriend just, innocently asked, "Are you looking forward to going to India tomorrow?" I was sitting there going, "No, like I don't want to go. Why, Sarah? Why are you doing this to yourself?" I was heading off to an ashram, where I was going to be staying for 2.5 weeks. In India.
And what's that?
An ashram is this kind of, it's a small community where people live within the walls of the ashram. So we'll have a place where you can practice yoga, meditation, you eat together. In India, we ate together just in lines on the floor. So we'd sit cross-legged, eating with our hands in silence. And we'd be up at 6:30 in the morning to chant for sunrise.
And how do they wake you up in these places? I presume it's not an alarm clock, is it?
No, it's the old-fashioned ding bell. kind of like what boarding school, I would imagine, would have been like. I didn't go to one.
And you're sharing rooms and everything.
Big dorm rooms, so everything, yeah. All the noises of people sleeping, and it was a hard one because I'd kind of come from Christmas of kind of getting home at 6 o'clock in the morning to being woken up at 6 o'clock in the morning, and it was tough the first couple of days. I found tough. I was tired, but then it just ended up being such an important trip. because I kind of got back to, you know, writing my journal, back to the things I was interested in. And while I was there, this big question kept coming up, and it was coming through my writing. And the question was, are you happy with the work you're doing, the job you're in, the life you're living? Mm-hmm. And the answer was no. And it was that kind of, once you've asked it and properly answered it, I just thought, oh no, what am I going to do now?
Like, because it's like, you, once you admit it to yourself, then you feel like it's your duty almost to address it for your own sake.
Absolutely, like you've finally been honest with yourself, mm-hmm. so then you can't lie. You can't.
So what did you do next?
So I got home and I didn't want to make any rash decisions. So I took the few months to think about what I actually wanted to do.
While working.
And notice period in a law firm is quite long. It's 3 months. So I had, in total, there were 6 months of this kind of what I think was a really important discovery process. That's a real legal term, discovery process. It's still there in me. But it was the part I did another kind of deep discovery, like I'd done when I was in Asia. But this time I'd written in my journal, dream job, dream life. And I started to kind of think about all the things, you know, you have these flights of fancy of what you might do or ideas. Mm-hmm. And you never take them that seriously. So I kind of started looking at them. Like one was to pack everything up and in a camper van and just travel around Europe, travel around the world, just become a traveller or a travel writer. That was a big one. But I kind of looked at that and realised I'd still wanted to, you know, to have my roots here. And I looked behind what that actually meant and I realised what I really wanted was freedom. So I wrote that word down in the journal, just freedom, and kind of would let that settle and moved on to what probably was my next flight of fancy. And for a while that was an aid worker in Africa. I really wanted to help people in some way. And I don't know if that's a kind of thing that happens when you get older, but you kind of are trying to work out what's your role in this world. Mm-hmm. And that, or I had watched Beyond Borders with Angelina Jolie and Clive Owen, that very romantic idea of going off to Africa and, you know, saving people. But I let the kind of romanticism of it settle and wrote down those words, that I wanted to help people and connect with people on a very human level.
Because in your career as a lawyer, you are helping people. So you were born with the desire to help people, but I suppose you got to the point where you were thinking about where you wanted to put the energy, you know,
yeah,
that sort of way.
Yeah, exactly, because that's what I struggled with for a little while. You know, can I not do these things through law? And that then I began realizing the last piece of the puzzle, which is interest and passion. I wanted something that I felt naturally able to, you know, talk about and help people with, or to, you know, just something that flowed naturally. I knew I could be passionate and interested about something and I just didn't know what it was. And I really desperately wanted that.
Do you remember then the day that you handed in your notice? Was that kind of a big milestone in your life?
Yeah, yeah. Handing in the notice, because you think people are going to think you're absolutely bonkers and cracked and not understand. But again, everyone's so supportive, you know, coming over and saying fair play.
And you had obviously made this decision that this is the path you wanted to go down. But did it take you long to put that plan into action? Did you kind of sit on it for a while?
Oh, yeah, yes. Definitely sat on it for a while, the kind of handing in the notice. That's the kind of hard part. Sat on it a bit for a while, and especially because I still wasn't sure. I had all these words, freedom, you know, mm-hmm. connecting with people on a human level. But I didn't know what that meant. And I didn't know what job I could find. So that made me sit on it for a little bit. And then it just got to a stage where I just have to do it. And my parents were very supportive in that. my dad just said, just do it.
Well, that's amazing that you had that support.
Yeah, amazing.
So tell us then, you handed in your notice, that you had to work your notice period, and then the final day came.
I just remember turning off the computer for the last time and knowing that that would be kind of the last time that I would be in a law firm.
And did your colleagues understand this decision? You said there was support there.
Yeah, absolutely. And people have their own stories. And this is what's, I always think, so interesting, and so interesting about a podcast like this. It's people's stories. Everyone can relate, you know? And same in a law firm. People relate. And a lot of people are going through, you know, the same reasons that I left, and, you know, just wanting to find better life balance. So, yeah, people are incredibly understanding.
So that was last August then, your last day?
That was last August, yeah.
And that's just quite recent.
Yes, when I think of it, I sometimes forget, yeah, just last August.
So then you set yourself a goal of wanting to do the Camino then the following month.
Yeah.
Is that 800 kilometres?
800 kilometres, yeah.
Wow.
It was, across the width of Spain.
Okay.
So that was, yeah.
And I've heard it can be a very spiritual experience, and it can be as long as you want it to be.
Yeah, lots of people just do a section of it. So I was going kind of full welly and decided I was going to do the whole thing. I was drawn to it for quite a while before, and when I got the chance to go for the full, I was there for 34 days. So 32 days walking.
Okay.
Took 2 days just break in between. And we're walking about 25 kilometres on average a day, 800 in total. And it was just an incredible experience. It taught me a lot and prepared me, I think, for what was to come afterwards.
I loved reading your blog and reading the story about the knickers. I think that was my favourite thing. So obviously you have to pack light because you have to carry everything on your back. And you spoke, I hope you don't mind me saying
this.
Not
at all.
You had two pairs of knickers and you'd wash one in the sink at night and then attach it to your bag.
Hang it on my bag so that it would dry in the Spanish sun the next day.
Amazing.
So, yeah, it was, it was, I suppose, symbolic as well. That's why I wrote about it, because it was symbolic about that we actually don't need that much stuff. I was carrying everything I needed for over a month. So I spent ages finding out about the weight of each piece of item of clothing and did I actually need it. I got rid of so much stuff like makeup and even deodorant, surplus. And it taught me that just the bare necessities, get them right, and everything else is just extra, like a third pair of knickers would have been.
So you walked then for a certain amount every day, and then do you have your accommodation planned, or do you just stop in somewhere and see if there's room at the inn?
Yes, that's exactly what I did. Now you can plan it. There's lots of different Caminos. Like some people, you can stay in, I think, hotels and B&Bs, but because I kind of like roughing it as like my Asia experience, I just would rock up to each place, and there's these big municipals which are government run, and they're big spaces like old community halls or old schools where they turn them into lodgings. So they're big massive dorm rooms, so you could be sleeping with 60 people.
So you always then were guaranteed of a bed at the end of the day.
Well, you'd have to queue up for the municipals, and sometimes they'd be closed. So then I'd have to go search for another, or they'd be full. So you'd have to go then search for another place. So some of the girls that I met, I walked with three other great girls who were all walking alone, and we became really great friends. They loved to book ahead. So they used to always be like Sarah and her municipals, and they'd book into B&Bs. So I'd often not see them in the evenings, but I was just really wanted to go to municipals. I don't know why. It was like 60 people in a dorm room, like the amount of snoring.
Oh my God.
People getting up and down to go to the toilet. So you get the creaking of the bed, of the beds, and very basic bunk beds. But I loved the community in the municipals. It was kind of where all the kind of eccentric people would be. And we'd get together and do big communal dinners, and you'd share wine, and you'd just chat. And for me, that was a really important part of it. And I wanted that kind of no frills, just very basic living.
It's funny because only in my recovery from cancer, I've kind of tapped in, and Alison Canavan said this on my podcast, to the power of human connection. And now I'm really conscious that when I meet up with people or I meet people for the first time, I note how I feel afterwards. And I always feel really happy and fulfilled after spending a day meeting a new person or seeing someone that I haven't seen in such a long time. Those like endorphins that it releases. So you at nighttime getting to know these new people, hearing their stories, like that obviously gave you so much.
The Camino, I think, is about people. That exact thing that you're speaking about there. You'd be walking along with maybe a couple of people you know, and you might just stop to tie your shoelace, so they'd walk ahead. So suddenly you're then walking with a new person and having these amazing conversations, and then they might walk away and you might never see them again. But like you're saying about that, what you're left with after that interaction is amazing. And that's, human connection, as much of it. And you get a lot of it on the Camino.
And like everyone, I'm sure, is walking for their own personal reasons. So it must be quite emotional too, is it?
Oh, yeah, really, yeah. There's everyone there seems to be at some sort of juncture in their life. Like a lot of people who've left their job, people recently divorced, recovering from illness, and so it's quite because it's a challenge, and it's a great place for that when you're at these, important times in your life.
And did you feel the benefits of walking every day and being surrounded by nature and being outdoors?
Yeah, I think that was a big part of it. For 34 days, I saw the sunrise every morning and the sunset every evening. So I just never forget that, because we don't get to do that. And just being outside for 8 hours every single day.
Amazing. So during that time, then you obviously had a lot of time to think about your life and what you were going to do next. And did you spend time doing that on the Camino?
Yeah, because you are talking to so many people and they're all asking your story. So you talk about it so much and you get inspired by people. So I had lots of ideas during it. But I remember coming into Santiago, which is the very end spot, and I thought by then I'd have it all figured out. We always do. At age 35, I'll have it all figured out, But I didn't. Santiago, I didn't have it all figured out. But I had this confidence in myself. And whether it was I'd become physically strong from walking every day, but I felt my confidence was strong. And I had this faith that everything was going to work out. Based on, I'm not sure what.
That's incredible. You trusted yourself and everything that you'd learned along the way.
Yes. And I think my mind was calm from walking every day. I got rid of a lot of, baggage in my mind. And I just, felt light, got rid of physical baggage and in my mind,
We'll get back to the conversation right away, but I just wanted to take a minute to give you an update on my Fitbit experience. I've been wearing the newly launched Fitbit Versa 2 over the last month, and not only does it have even more health and fitness tracking features, it has 5 days of battery life and a new always-on display. I monitor my sleep every night and get a sleep score every morning. this is actually making me go to bed earlier because I found out that I'm not getting as much sleep as I thought I was. Alexa has come to Fitbit so I can find out the weather forecast, set timers and reminders, all by talking into my wrist. Oh, and the best thing of all, Fitbit Pay. I can now leave my wallet at home and tap to pay for things from my wrist. Really handy when you want to grab a coffee after a workout. Fitbit is really helping me keep on top of my healthy habits. Now, back to our conversation. And is there any standout moments from that trip for you?
On the Camino, I think probably walking in to Santiago with the three other girls that I met on day one. Like, wow. they were one of the first people I met, and we'd been through so much because they had their different reasons for being there, and everything happens on the Camino. You kind of have tears. We developed a really strong friendship. I even had a romance that went terribly wrong, you know, all of this in the space of a month. And then the friends there to support. So, yeah.
And where were those girls from?
One from Canada, Northern Canada, and Australia and New Zealand.
Wow.
Yeah, all found their way to Spain, you know, on that very day, all of us to meet. And just mad that they're all from so far away, and we keep in contact now, and we're definitely going to probably do another one.
You shared something so special together.
Yeah, and just you connect with people very, very quickly on the Camino because I suppose you have a shared interest of being there, and yeah, there was just a strong connection with them.
Incredible. Tell us about then coming home and starting your new life.
Yeah, so I came home and I was excited to be home, but wasn't really sure what I was doing next. And this is where the magic starts, because I'm home 3 days for a friend's wedding, and I bump into a guy I know from years, Adam from 250 Square is his place.
That's a coffee shop in Rathmines.
Coffee shop in Rathmines. And he says, himself and Louis suggest that I come and do some yoga there. Would I be interested? And I kind of thought, I hadn't really thought about being a yoga teacher. But I thought, well, sure, I'll give it a go and see. And I set up two classes there, two weekly classes. And I just started. And it's hard because I think any yoga teacher will kind of relate to this, that when you come out of your yoga teacher training, you still don't very much see yourself as a yoga teacher, and you need to practice. So you need someone to give you that break of starting to teach. So it was Louis and Adam in 250
amazing?
Square.
And I know them too. They're great guys.
Yeah. And I'm there now nearly a year. So they definitely gave me the start. And
can you remember your first class?
Yes, I remember. You know, you're so kind of, you have that imposter syndrome and you feel nervous. But I had all my friends there. I have two sisters, so they were a guaranteed two people on the mats each time.
It's so hard to put yourself out there and put up your class, and you're obviously thinking, what if nobody comes?
What if nobody comes? Just one person comes, you know, like, yeah. So it was amazing having the sisters and my friends, and then my cousins, my aunties. People just show up. And this is where, like, people are just amazing. In the last year, I am just totally in awe of people because of the support that they give. And so that's what got me going, and the classes stayed full, and then gradually it started to attract, you know, locals in the area, and gradually then more opportunities actually quite quickly came along. And this was where I just couldn't believe, because it just all happened. It all seemed to start flowing. I finally felt in the flow of life, and I just had never really properly felt that before. And great opportunities coming. And when I look back on the year now and just think of, like, some of the amazing things that have happened.
It's incredible, because similarly in my situation, I gave up my job in June, and I know everyone is not in the same position where you can't just give up your job, but I suppose I had started doing the podcast on the side and little opportunities were coming up, and I was worried about my health again, and I was very anxious that I was going to get sick because I was running around like a headless chicken. So I decided to leave my job, but I had no other jobs booked in. I didn't have the new season of my podcast sponsored, which is now sponsored by Fitbit. Didn't have that deal. And I had nothing in my calendar. But I trusted that if I gave this up, that something would happen for me. Something, once you close one door, another door would open. So I went out. I was at Pippa, an event Pippa O'Connor had. I was with my best friend and we went for a drink afterwards. And that day, my resignation had been accepted. And 4 hours later, I got an email with a job that I had booked in. And I knew that I'd be okay once that job came in. But it was funny that that didn't happen for me until I closed the door of the first door. So it's such a hard place, because I don't want people listening to be like, oh, it's easy for you to say, because I was so blessed that I did have other opportunities. But I did feel like you kind of have to walk away sometimes in order, like you say, for the flow to happen.
Absolutely. And it is hard, and it's timing. It's kind of getting backing yourself and creating space in your life for the thing you want to flow in.
Yeah.
So if you're kind of doing either work that you don't want to be doing, there's no space for the work you want to come in.
Mm-hmm.
So you do kind of have to let stuff go.
Yeah.
And
trust
that it will happen.
Amazing. So you wake up now and you go and you do your yoga, and you're doing corporate talks. You went back to, was it to your office?
I went back to the Law Society.
To the Law
Society. So where, yeah, that's where we train to become solicitors. So the last time I was there was when I picked up my certificate to qualify. And then all these years later, I hadn't been there since. I'm teaching yoga outside. It was a beautiful sunny day. And giving a talk to a group of women there about my journey from law to yoga. So incredibly progressive of the Women's Association there to invite essentially a runaway back to tell the story.
Yeah.
But again, and there was loads of lawyers there. And again, everybody can relate, because at the end of the day, it's just kind of listening to yourself, you know, and everybody can relate to that.
And obviously you're not going back there to encourage people to quit law, but what do you talk to them about?
Because it's if it works, stay with it, you know. So I'm not encouraging anyone to just jump up and leave, but what I was encouraging, I suppose, with there is to listen to what you are interested in, and to be able to carve out of your day,
incorporate it into
your day, and I was encouraging, I suppose, to make time in your day for yourself, because I know from being in a law firm, it's really hard. And you mentioned this before about, you know, lunch at your desk, and you know, not leaving, and you have to get into a practice, or try to, where you just leave. And I got really good at it towards the end of being in the law firm. I used to go to a 45 minute express flow every lunchtime. And you could then get known as, oh, she's gone to her yoga.
Mm-hmm.
So it's creating this kind of sacred thing that you do that nobody else can interfere. So you kind of draw a circle around it.
Yeah.
And
because
this is my time.
Your break is there. Your hour lunch break is there for you to take a break. So nobody, it's so hard. Like, I worked at my desk for 10 years. And then when I went back to work last October, I picked up my coat at the start of my lunch break every day, and I left even if I'd nowhere to go, but I just walked, just went out, got fresh air, and I came back a different person. But it is so hard to get people to stand up for themselves almost and take that break that they need, or that time for themselves.
Absolutely. And it's just practice and repeating mm-hmm. it, because there was definitely times I'd feel really guilty grabbing my yoga mat. Like we'd have a deal closing that evening or the next day, and it seems like everyone else is at their desk and you're, you know, maybe a bit more junior on the team and running out with your yoga mat. So I definitely did feel a little sense of guilt, and I think that needs to change. Mm. And I just used to ignore it, and the more I did it, the less you'd notice it. But I was hell bent on it, but I still had that sense of, ooh, I hope they don't think I'm slacking off.
Yeah.
But it's my lunch break.
Yeah.
And do you know what? They mightn't either. It could be just, you know, in your mm-hmm. own mind as well. So there's that kind of.
And then taking that break and coming back like revitalized, you can bring so much to the afternoon that you wouldn't be able to bring maybe if you just sat at your desk, like on your emails or on Instagram scrolling.
Absolutely. Like, we're not supposed to be intaking all of this information from screens. We need recharging, and whether it's just taking a walk, going to a class, anything, reading a book, anything that just switches your mind off.
And what has yoga done for your life? Like, I've spoken to Julie B about this, and she almost gets emotional speaking about the importance of yoga. And I did a bit of yoga before I got sick. I haven't yet gone back to it because I do find it a very emotional thing to do.
Yeah, and it does, because it's releasing kind of trapped energies, mm-hmm. trapped emotions in our body, so it can bring it all to the surface. So it can be quite an emotional practice. And for me, what I love about yoga is how it has allowed me to control my mind, to learn how to silence the mind. That's been the big thing. And through the movement and through the meditation, to get out of the mind, because I think all through my 20s, I was just, you know, that kind of hamster wheel running around mm-hmm. in your head, constant thinking. And it's taught me to separate from that and just allow it to quieten down. And it means my life. It just has such a profound effect, because you're just calmer and can enjoy things as they are, rather than always thinking, always expecting. Just, I suppose, being present is what yoga's taught me most.
We're so used to seeing kind of instant results, but what meditation does is actually allowing your body to recover and to heal. Like you said, getting off that hamster mode, getting out of fight or flight mode, and just giving your body time to rest and acknowledge what is going on is so important.
So important. And it's one of those frustrating things that you just have to do it every day. And like you said, meditation doesn't give instant results at all. It's such a subtle, and same with yoga, it teaches you patience to stick, and discipline, you know, to stick with the practice, be patient, and the results will come. And that's true also, I think, in life, when we're working on ourselves, hoping, you know, working with either our desires or intentions, things take time. It's gradual.
And can you meditate on the Lewis on the way to work? Or do you need to be like sitting in your back garden beside a fountain?
Fountain dressed in white. Yeah, you can do it anytime. You can take time, because you can do it on the Lewis, which is especially good because that's when we're always on the phone.
Yeah.
And just getting into your, observing your breath. You can do it when you're walking, sitting, just sitting and observing your breath.
I remember it was so funny. I was talking to my stepdad one day, and I said, oh, my battery died like at Harcourt Street on my phone, and I had to get all the way to Sandyford on the Lewis. And he said, oh, right. And what did you do? And I was like, just looked out the window. This is like before I got sick, when I was always like scrolling, running around, late. What did you do? Well, I just looked out the window, and I was like, I saw things that I hadn't seen before. Like, how crazy is that? Like, this morning I did a talk for AIB, and I was about to go in and give this presentation, and I was flicking through my notes, and I said, do you know what, I know this, but instead of looking through my notes, I'm going to just look out the window for a minute and just be thankful for my life, be thankful for today that I'm well enough to do this. And that, I think, that energy will bring so much more to the talk than looking over these notes will.
Absolutely, because you have it, it's all there in your head. The best thing we can do before anything like that, and same with the yoga class, like, is just to get centered, grounded into the moment, and you then give your best self.
It's so powerful. Tell us a little bit then about your healthy habits or any self-care tips that you might have. Obviously, you look so amazing. You look beautiful. Your skin is glowing. You look the picture of health. You obviously live a great lifestyle.
Oh, thank you, Georgie. So my lifestyle and healthy I'd love to wax lyric about this. I have a good routine that I finally got myself into, which actually took a while. Even as, you know, working for myself, yoga teacher, you think, you know, zen life, but it was getting a bit hectic for a while, and now I've got it down to a much more, you know, manageable, where I have a morning practice every morning where I meditate and I write and I light my incense and I have my mantras, and I now have a Tibetan singing bowl that I use. So it's getting longer and longer. It started off 15 minutes. I now need about an hour. So soon I'm going to be like, sorry, I'm not around till 11 every morning. But it's getting longer and longer. And I've created this altar in my apartment that is getting bigger and bigger and bigger. So I might only be able to work half days. But it's so important to me. And I love that I've created it. And it's when I look at that altar, it's says to me, you're caring about yourself, and it's lovely. Like when it was all turned autumn there, I went to the park and gathered loads of leaves and then put them all around the altar. Like, I never used to do this type of thing, and just creating these kind of, trying to be creative and making it as beautiful, because it is I suppose a little shrine to myself.
And what has sea swimming done for you?
The sea swimming started a few years ago, and I just feel so wonderful after a swim. Like, you never regret a swim. Now, in the summer, it's lovely. I'm continuing. I go throughout the year, and in the winter months, it's more just like a plunge in, plunge out.
Okay.
But it just is invigorating. It's a very, I feel very connected to nature when I do it. If I'm stressed or up in my mind, it's a very grounding thing to do. And I love going down there. The people down there are great crack.
Do you go first thing in the morning?
I go depending, because I swim in Sea Point, so it depends when the tide is.
Okay.
Because the moon's always changing the tide. See what the high tide is. So it can be swimming in the evening, morning time. During the week, if I go, I'd go on my own. And then at the weekend, I've got a gang of friends that we all go together. And that's always great fun.
How do you get... sea swimming is something that I would love to do. I didn't get into the sea before I got sick. And when I went to my friend's wedding in Portugal, just at the end of chemo, I jumped into the sea. And I felt like I felt the benefits of that for weeks afterwards. And I want to get back into it again, but I hate cold. Water. So, like, how do you get your brain in the mode of just get in?
It's something that happens. It doesn't get easier. You know, each time you're wading in and the water's kind of coming up and you're going,
oh, I hate that.
I just make loads of noise. I said to one of my friends, I wonder would I ever be able to get in silently, because the noise out of me as I get in. And you just get in, and when it's coming up towards your chest, that's the worst part.
Okay.
And that's when you just have to jump out.
Okay, then you
That's the kind of, and once you get the shoulders under, and I stick the head under.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. People keep saying, would you get a hat? Like, or, you know, because it's in my togs, like it's not the wetsuit or anything during the year. So, or even earplugs, because I don't know, it might be a little bit not great for the ears going in cold water. But it's that once you get the shoulders under, mm-hmm. it's okay. And then something happens. You can feel it in your body. It all just starts to kind of even out. And you suddenly feel, we all start saying to each other, oh, this isn't so bad, is it?
Wow. So it's that second or two just to get over. But the benefits of it are so much greater than that second of it being freezing.
Absolutely. And you get out and you're just, everyone's chitter-chatter. You're buzzed after it. And yeah. you go home and get into a warm shower, have a cup of tea. And it's just the whole ritual of it. Mm. I absolutely love.
I watched that RTE documentary last week of sea swimming, and so emotional watching people's stories and what they get out of it. But it Jamie has started to do it, and I really want to do it. I just building up the courage slowly, but it's free. It's on our doorstep. Like, what an amazing thing you can do for yourself.
Absolutely. Give it a go. Come down to Sea Point with us, Georgie.
I'll be with you one day. Thank you so much. I have one final question before I let you go. This was such an interesting podcast to me. Thank you so much for coming in to tell your story. I just wanted to know the difference you feel waking up now to how you felt when you woke up, say, 2 or 3 years ago.
I feel free when I wake up. That was my big thing. I just wanted freedom to do and live the life I really wanted. And so I'm excited every day. I really am. You always hear the, you know, find what you love and you won't work a day in your life. I mm-hmm. never understood what that meant, but it doesn't feel like work. It feels every week is different. And I'm just every day in awe of all the magical things that are happening.
Wow.
And yeah.
And people can follow you on Instagram at Sarah Shannon Yoga, and we can check out more on your story on your website.
Yeah, I do my writings on sarahshannonyoga.com. And yeah, we'll have lots of events and retreat next year. So,
oh, amazing.
Yeah.
I'd love to do that. Mm. And thanks a million to Blanche for putting us in touch. She's a great girl. She knew that you would be amazing on this podcast.
Like, people are just amazing. And Blanche, one of the best. So this one is for Blanche.
Aww. Thanks for listening to the Good Glow podcast with thanks to Fitbit. If you're enjoying this podcast, please hit the subscribe button and leave a review. For more on my story, you can follow me on Instagram at georgie.crawford.